everyone. Welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice from the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
So we have a blast from the past today. Do you know what my favorite year is in the 20th century?
I don't. I'm guessing it's
1955.
Oh, okay. That was the year you were born.
It was the year I was born. It's the beginning of the church growth movement. For any haters out there, I'm a very balanced church growth movement guy. It was also the beginning of rock and roll.
Was that the Ed Sullivan, the Beatles coming?
No. Later? That was early 60s. Oh, okay. It was a star whose name has escaped me right now, okay, because I don't remember when I was 0 years old.
Yeah, that's
who that was. We're not going to go all the way back to 1955, but we are going to go back to the early part of the 21st century now, which is almost two decades ago. Crazy, crazy. And we're going to talk about two books and specifically what we did with those books. This podcast will focus on Surprising Insights from the Unchurched.
We got a later one.
And a later one that will focus on the book, The Unchurched Next Door. So there's a reason behind it, and we're going to get to that reason now, and we thank our sponsor, first of all.
Yeah, Midwestern. If you are looking to get a Master of Divinity degree, the MDiv, Midwestern's flagship degree program is the primary track for ministry preparation. At just 81 hours, the Midwestern MDiv offers a complete foundation for full-time ministry leaders, offering everything you need and nothing you don't. You can join other students in vibrant Kansas City as you train in a unique collaborative environment focused on a local church, or study online in your current ministry context. Midwestern Seminary is developing a discipleship culture devoted to the local church and committed to God's unchanging word. Start your training today at mbts.edu/mdiv.
Okay, you did not really know about these books until you knew me, or had you seen them ahead of time?
No, I think I was introduced to the third in this series, which would be Breakout Churches.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the covers, if you have the three covers, they look very similar. Surprising Insights is an orange cover. The Unchurched Next Door.
Wait a minute. Well, you're in paperback.
The paperback Zondervan one's later on, not the hardback.
The hardback had people on the front.
Yeah.
Of Surprising Insights from the I forget all about the paperback because I like the hardback even better.
Oh, well, see, I'm used to the paperbacks.
Okay.
You know, I was a guy on a budget back then.
Sure.
But yeah, so I was introduced to the third one first and then kind of went back and saw the others.
Okay. So you know about them. Now we're going to let our audience be, many of them will be introduced to these books for the first time. Once again, there is a reason for that. We're not trying to hawk old books as much as we are to try to ask questions about the research and what took place then and how does it apply to now.
So whenever it was published, how was it different than books on the Unchurched? We don't see very many books on the Unchurched these days at all now. So were there many books on the Unchurched in the early 21st century?
I would call it a flurry, but not a copious amount. There was four or five that came out. Barna was one of them that had a research-based. Maybe two or three that were more anecdotal than research-based, but not really a lot of them out, and not a lot of them since then. There's reasons behind it. Sometimes it's hard to get the information on it.
Yeah, because you had to have research. So let's talk about the research. What was the research methodology for it?
Okay, the research methodology for Surprising Insights from the Unchurched was different. As a matter of fact, I had not published with Zondervan at the time. I was with another publisher called B&H back in those days.
I've heard of them.
And I left B&H. I was not at Lifeway. Went to Zondervan, which at the time was a better publisher. Now I prefer strongly B&H, not just because of my title, just because of the quality of people that are at B&H. So this particular book was a book about the formerly unchurched. It was not a book about the unchurched, even though we called it Surprising Insights from the Unchurched. So let's look at it this way, Jonathan. What's your favorite restaurant?
Let's go with Jay Alexander's.
All right, let's go with Jay Alexander's. One of your favorite restaurants is Jay Alexander's. If I wanted you to tell me about Jay Alexander's, would it be better to talk to you if you've eaten there or if you never have, and just to get your attitude toward it if you've never been there?
If I have.
Okay.
Obviously.
Same logic there. We wanted to talk to people who were unchurched all of their lives, but have recently, within the past 12 months of the research, gone to church, become followers of Christ, and now are church. And we, instead of saying, what do you think of church? We wanted to ask them why they were connected to that church and how they had a gospel conversation.
So you're getting a research on the life change that happened to people who were unchurched.
Life change and church approach to them, which was even as important. So what we did is we interviewed 353 people, in round numbers, 353.
You just pulled that number off the top of your head. That's amazing. You remember these numbers.
One of the reasons we did that is I was working with a research methodologist, Dr. John Rainbow, who was at the time at Southern Seminary. And I said, okay, if I'm going to use the interview method, I know that it's not typical quantitative research where you have the margin of error and all that. I said, what is acceptable? So he asked me the type of questions I'd be asking, how I would get the individuals. And he said, if you could do around 300, it would be powerful research. Especially with the type of lengthy interviews we were doing. So got a research team together. 353 ended up being the number above, obviously, wow, the 300. So then they interviewed all over the place.
Really? So yes. It wasn't just like in the Louisville area or wherever, because you were at Southern at this time.
I was.
So y'all went like nationwide with these interviews.
We went nationwide with the Surprising Insights from the Unchurched, and then we went also to Canada with the follow-up book, The Unchurched Next Door. And basically what I did was I assigned each of my researchers a geographical region. And so I told him or her, here are the 3 to 4 states that you are responsible for. Now go find some recently church people who were formerly unchurched. There's another story behind this, and I don't want to get too much in the stories because our listeners more would enjoy the results of it and the why behind it. But there's another story behind it. I don't know what number book that was, but I was convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that I had the perfect title with the formerly unchurched. Zondervan was convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that I was wrong. And so it's one of the few times that I have butted heads with a publisher over a cover, over a editing change, certainly over a title. And I've had, I can think of one title back in my old B&H days called Giant Awakenings that just stunk. And there's a story behind that itself. And the sales of it reflect both the title and maybe some other issues that caused it to stink. But I wanted to call it The Formerly Unchurched. I just thought that was a cool title. And they said, no, there's so many surprising insights here. We're going to call it Surprising Insights. Ended up that being the hook.
Yeah, it's a great title.
Yeah, they did a great job.
All right, so the big question is, it's been 17, 18 years since the book was published. Is the book and the data still relevant today?
I think the data is pretty relevant for the Surprising Unchurched, Surprising Insights from the Unchurched. When we do the next podcast, I'll have a few more caveats about that particular data. Now, how do I know that? Well, it's been a little bit under 20 years. I have not done, to be clear, an interview process as comprehensive as that. However, you and I get continuous feedback loops from churches. We continue to hear from them. We continue to get information from them. And so based upon the anecdotal information that we're getting from churches who are reaching people who are not believers in Christ, I would say that I have a fairly high level of confidence that the data is still pretty relevant. There will be some exceptions within there that's 18 years old, but I would feel pretty good about the data. And what I'm basically doing is saying the interview methodology was sound, and it was so sound that you can do anecdotal follow-up even in an informal way and find out, are some of these things still true?
So what did you find whenever you started looking at the diverse locations, diverse groups? I mean, let's go over the data then.
Okay. Well, first of all, diverse locations, diverse groups.
Yeah.
Nothing.
So it was kind of the same results no matter where you looked.
It was so statistically the same results that we were flabbergasted.
Wow.
I believe it was Bland Mason, who was on my research team. I'm trying to remember if he was with me. Yeah, he's a church planner in Boston. You probably read about him as well, but he was one of my students. If I recall correctly, I sent Bland to the Northwest because he had connections in the Northwest, maybe even gone to school at Washington State or Oregon and somewhere in that area. And he did his interviews, and then I can't remember who did some of the Bible Belt interviews like Birmingham, Atlanta, places like that. And they came back and compared notes, and they said, this is really just pretty much the same stuff.
Well, that's what we found, though, whenever we talked to Mike Rubino.
Remember
the podcast we had with him? I think that was on the other podcast we have, Revitalize and Replant.
Yeah.
We had Doc Rubino on, and he's a pastor, for those of you that don't listen to that podcast, and you should. He's a pastor in the Long Island area. So he's on Long Island, and he was telling us about how to, you know, the how they're reaching people there.
Yeah.
And it's the same as just reaching people in the Bible Belt.
Yes.
I mean, it was the same thing. We found the same results, and we're hearing from pastors. And we see the same thing in Church Answers.
Yep, we do. And Church Answers is international.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've noticed this, but I've noticed this. Our Australians are really getting active in Church Answers. And
just while we sleep.
Yes. they're offering a lot of good input. And what we're finding is, even though they're contextual differences, even though they're indigenous differences, a lot of what people are doing to reach people with the gospel are similar. So that was one of the surprises. Another surprise that was kind of one way or the other was the church name.
Yes.
The church name was not nearly as important to someone coming to the church as maybe transfer growth.
Mm-hmm.
So Jonathan Howe is looking for a church. He's moved to Franklin. We know which church he's going to go to because his wife is a children's minister. But supposing that Jonathan Howe is now looking for a church, you are going to be actually more discerning about church name than an unchurched person.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because I've got a church background.
Yep, exactly. Although we did another study, and it was informal. I think it was done on social media. We did another study, and we found that there's a lot of negativity with the word Baptist.
Yes.
Among all groups.
We only have ourselves to blame.
Yes, yes. And so you put that, but that really is more about the church than the unchurched.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the unchurched hear about us, they're going to choose a church for different reasons, and the name of the church is going to be secondary or tertiary.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there's some people who are listening to this who are saying, oh my goodness, I'm thinking about changing the name of my church. Should I not do that? I'm not saying that one way or another. I'm just saying with the long-term unchurched, at least in this study, it was not nearly the factor that you may have predicted it would be.
Yeah, and well, when we talk about church names now, and especially in this, it seems like this may not have been as important, because what we found, and I'm guessing the data backs it up too, is that the key driver in somebody coming to a church is typically relationships.
Well, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah. So, well, let's move to that.
Okay. So we're going to talk about the big three.
Yeah.
The big three. What were the big three factors? These, I feel, a high level of confidence have not changed.
Mm-hmm.
Because we continue to hear it.
Yeah.
Here are the big three. Preaching and the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Makes a whole lot of sense. Really, really high. Second, doctrine. The unchurched are checking what you believe because they don't want to go to a non-convictional church.
Ah.
If they're going to go to a church, they want to go to a church that really believes what it says it believes.
And we've seen that probably increase.
Yes.
Because of the millennials.
That's exactly right.
If you tie that to that book,
yeah, I mean, because
they want authenticity, they want convictional beliefs.
So from the very beginning of the millennial generation, that number has to even be stronger than it was. And if I remember, the number was like 9 out of 10 for the preaching and 8 out of 10 for the doctrine, for the beliefs of the church. And then third, slightly distant, but still enough within the big three, is the relationship issue.
Mm-hmm.
Just inviting someone, developing a relationship with someone. Those three were so significant that when it was all said and done, number four was way in the back of the pack, much less 5, 6, 7, 8.
So whenever we think about the big three, and we're talking to church leaders and pastors right now, and they're thinking, all right, we want to reach unchurched people.
Mm-hmm.
How do they improve on the big three? So number one, pastor and preaching.
Yeah, well, we put a lot of responsibility on the pastor. I don't know how to take the onus of responsibility off the pastor.
Well, in the local church, I mean, he's the under-shepherd, so it's...
And when the pastor does, here is just a good little tip for pastors. When someone visits your church, if you have contact information, contact them.
Yeah.
Text
pastor
them.
Contact makes more huge impact
difference
than anybody else.
Huge difference. Does that mean that you're going to have to go visit everybody, take them to lunch, go to a coffee shop? That helps, but it does mean that they would like some type of contact. So if you have an email, send them an email address. If you have their telephone number, send them a text. Those are the two most powerful things. And just simply say, glad you're here. Make certain it's personalized, that it's not something that feels like you just put a template in there. And then send them some type of contact. So that's number one. Obviously, we go back to the priority of preaching.
Yes.
And I harped on that in that book. And I even, half of Surprising Insights, Jonathan, is on leadership issues because leadership is so important. So I said, time out. And I did another study on leadership. It's like two mini books in one. Well, compared to some of the books I write now, it's like two major books in one book. And so I have this, okay, here are the type of leaders that are leading churches to attract the unchurched. And one of the characteristics was they're spending 15 to 20 hours in sermon preparation. So that's another.
Another we've talked about on the podcast here.
Another one is be convictional about what you believe.
Yeah, that ties right in. I mean, the preaching and being a, you know, good preaching is usually convictional.
Yes.
I mean, it can be more of a speech than anything sometimes. But at the same time,
it's usually preaching, convictional.
It's convictional.
Right.
And that ties into number two.
Yes, exactly. And then spend adequate time in sermon preparation so that you are communicating well in sermon preparation. And then on the doctrine issue, not only be convictional, but be clear on what you believe. Mm-hmm. So we talk about the website again and again and again, but one of the places that one of the things we need on the website, probably not on the front page, but at least what we believe tab,
yeah,
so that they can click on and see what you believe. Believe it or not, the what you believe or the doctrine section is one of the most visited places by the unchurched. We always know that the physical address and the time of services are the two biggies, but that is one of them. That and staff are two of the other big ones.
And I would guess that dechurched people who, you know, previously been in church but not in church currently, they would also, those two things, I mean, these three insights, really, they kind of fit for them too.
Yeah. So they left for reasons, but they will come back for similar reasons as well.
Yeah, and the biggie that we always talk about, the relationships.
Yeah.
And how, you know, the easiest thing there is just to create a culture of inviting and, you know, hospitality in your church.
Yep.
So become a welcoming church. People.
There's a book by
available
that title.
At Lifeway.com.
There is a book out there. Become a welcoming church. So it means reaching them, and it means making them feel welcome when they come, and it means having some type of follow-up after they come. Mm-hmm. There's the sequence out there.
Yeah.
I know you just got through reading a manuscript I wrote called Scrappy Church.
I love that book.
You love that book?
Yep. It's coming this fall, folks.
And that book has a lot of this sequence in it, in what I call the
turnaround cycle.
Mm-hmm. And so we actually just say, here is what turnaround churches are doing. So I will tie the past to the present as we move into the future.
There you go. And what I like about Surprising Insights and a lot of your books, I mean, all but one book I think of yours is hopeful.
The autopsy.
And I think actually that's a really hopeful book too. It's just the title is
like don't do this.
It's kind of, you know, morbid at times, but the hope that is given there, because those three things that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Any church, anywhere, any size, any budget, any pastor experience level, they can do those three things.
We didn't talk about opulent buildings.
No.
We didn't talk about huge budgets.
No.
We didn't talk about some of the coolest people in the church. We just talked about basics. We talked about preaching, doctrine, and relationships. And any church, anywhere, anytime, any budget can do that.
It seems like whenever we get away from those three, that's when we start introducing conflict and things into the church that maybe cause people to leave.
And it's also when we introduce frustration into the lives of leaders and members.
There you go.
You say, we can't do that. And the comparison factor comes in. Mm-hmm. That church can do that down the road. Oh, they just started a new campus here. What are they doing? So, those are all good.
So, in conclusion, we have Surprising Insights from the unchurched. Really, you know, the data may be a little bit different from here and there, but it holds up.
It still holds up. There is very little in Surprising Insights from the unchurched that would tell me that it does not hold up today, because we were talking to people who were not in church, but then within the last 12 months are in church. So as a consequence, I think the data is solid. And I really, really did like the hardback, but I think only the soft cover is out there now.
Yeah. So is this something that maybe pastors should follow up with new converts that have been unchurched and they're... It seems like an obvious thing that if you had people that are coming to Christ in your church over the last 12 months ask them what are the main two or three factors,
mm-hmm.
and see if they fit in these.
Well,
because I'm guessing they will.
I'm just thinking about those we've baptized recently at our church, just as a highly anecdotal information. Two of them, total relationships, came from the student ministry. Two of them through our bread ministry, all mm-hmm. relationships.
Yeah.
Somebody actually gave them a loaf of bread on a Sunday afternoon and invited them to church.
See, I think that one probably has moved closer to the top two over the, you know, almost 20 years.
Maybe so.
That'd be my
yeah,
guess.
Could be.
Guesstimate.
Here. Could be. So. Fairly exhaustive study, something that has really, really made a big difference in my life as I lead other churches and mentor other churches. Speaking of mentoring and leading, thank you, Vander Blumen, for all you do to lead and mentor so many churches and leaders.
Yeah, if you're looking for a coaching network, Vander Blumen can hook you up this fall. The applications are open for their Fall Pastor Coaching Network at their Houston headquarters in September and November. There are two networks, one for lead pastors, one for executive pastors. Each group is limited to just 16 people, so it's a roundtable, close-knit network where you can grow as a leader, so you can grow your team and ultimately grow your church. If you're interested in joining, visit vanderblumen.com/coaching for more information. Once again, that's vanderblumen.com/coaching. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
I was sitting at this desk, less than 24 hours ago, being interviewed by William Vander Blumen
uh-huh.
for his podcast.
That's right.
He wanted to talk to me about interimpastor.university.
Oh.
He's really kind of excited about the fact that we're offering training now in certification for interim pastors, because he's moving into that world as well, in the world
cool.
of search. So
awesome.
we'll be connecting together. I always love working with the Vander Blumen Search Group.
All right. Thanks again for joining us here today on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or in your favorite podcasting app. And join us online at TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.